Hello and welcome to NewsHour from the BBC World Service. We're coming to you live from London. I'm James Menendez. And we're going to start today in northern Ethiopia in the fighting between the government and the dissident authorities in Tigray province. Last night, Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's ultimatum for Tigrayan fighters to surrender expired, meaning that his planned assault on the regional capital, Mekele, home to about 500,000 people, would begin today. Getting accurate information about that military operation is proving almost impossible. But a short time ago, we did contact Daniel Bahane, who we spoke to last on Wednesday. He's the founder of an online news site called Horn Affairs. He's in Mekele. What's the situation now?
Well, it's a bit surprising. Like when we wake up in the morning, the city, everybody was kind of relieved. People were worried Abiy Ahmed might manage to conduct airstrike or anything, but nothing happened. And as far as the news from the front is concerned, 98 kilometers away from Mekele, there, according to the information coming from that front, the invading army has lost momentum. This morning, shops, coffee houses, restaurants, almost they are full. It's not like the pre-war time. Of course, it's a bit down, but much better than the feeling in the past 4 days.
And so just to be clear, there's no sign of military activity at all in the city?
No, nothing at all.
Given that communications have been intermittent, the internet and phones and so on, do most people in the city actually know what is going on and know that the Ethiopian government has announced that they will begin this offensive today?
Yes. Actually, people are aware because, one, there is a mobile phone service that works within Tigray, half of Tigray. The server is in Mekele and people are using that. They are communicating each other. They just can't call outside of Tigray. Second, this is the talk of the town. Everybody hears this. Third, there is television and radio at everyone's house. Electricity is not interrupted yet. Therefore, people are very much aware. That's why there was kind of a depressed mood yesterday, because they are aware of the 72 hours ultimatum. So people were very aware.
That was Daniel Bahane in Mekele. And as he was mentioning, local radio and TV are still working there. BBC Monitoring in Nairobi's been listening in to the local news. And this was the top story on the regional state broadcaster Tigray TV.
As we reported yesterday evening at 7 p.m, our Tigray Defence Forces have scored heroic achievements. In yesterday's report, the heroic defence forces fully destroyed four divisions of Isaias Afwerki's army, which were attacking our people.
This woman, though, interviewed, sounded less relaxed about the situation in the region.
All the remnant forces ganged up against the people of Tigray and are bombing and crushing the people of Tigray. And we have sleepless nights thinking about our children.
Well, Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed says civilians will be spared during the planned attack on Mekele. But given its size and density, fears are growing for the welfare of residents, especially if essential goods and services are further curtailed. Among those sounding the alarm bell is Michelle Bachelet, the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights. She joins us on the line from Geneva now. Very good to have you with us on NewsHour. How concerned are you about the prospect of a full-scale military assault on Mekele?
Well, we are, thank you, James. We're really alarmed by the dangerous situation, particularly because of the civilians trapped in Mekele. As you mentioned, there's 500,000 there and in deep peril, and especially because there's a lot of provocative rhetoric by both sides. So I'm very concerned about the potential for serious violations of international humanitarian human rights law.
When you talk about rhetoric on both sides, I mean, is it things like the Tigrayan leader who said that his people were ready to die in the face of this assault?
I mean, on one hand, yes, that's true. And on the other hand, there's a colonel saying they will have no mercy. So maybe some leaders are willing to die, but I don't know if women and children are willing to die. So we're really concerned about the civilians. I mean, the militaries, they can do their fights, but there's lots of people there completely innocent that can suffer great violations, die or be different casualties.
Have you aired your concerns with the Ethiopian government?
Well, yes, I spoke to the ambassador of here in Geneva, and our concerns, I mean, sharing our concerns and asking for two things. The first is protection of civilians. And second is access to humanitarian actors, because even though I was hearing what your colleague said from Mekele, the information that we have is that in many places they have no food, no electricity, no internet, and that has been a problem for us to verify many of the allegations of violation of human rights from both sides that we have received. So we are really concerned that it can come a big famine because there are lack of food and water. So yes, we have raised a concern, and of course the Secretary General has raised a concern with the government many times, and our people, the UN teams in Addis Ababa, they have work with the government to try to ensure access to humanitarian actors so they can bring whatever is needed, medicines, food, etc. Because it's this war, but it's also the COVID-19 in the middle as well.
Yes. In terms of the immediate danger, I mean, when the government says that civilians would be spared during any attack, is that even possible in a densely populated city?
I don't know. I'm not sure, because, I mean, if you're bombing, you are going to have civilian casualties, you know? We heard yesterday that there was the army, the National Defense Forces were 60 kilometers from Mekele, and there were heavy artillery and tanks, and of course, we have heard of bombing. I mean, nothing that we can verify is what we have received as information. So I think that they have said that they are going to take care and protect civilians from harm. But for this to be ensured, we have to urge the government to ensure unfettered humanitarian access in Tigray to deliver assistance to the communities that really need it.
But of course, there are two sides to this conflict, and the Ethiopian government blames the authorities in Tigray for starting all this. Are you in contact with them at all and asking for assurances about what they'll do?
No. I mean, we have our office in Addis, but they have not been able to go to Tigray because of the security situation. But of course, there's two sides. And what we've been calling is to try to insist on a political dialogue. But it looks like the envoys who came, with different presidents from, former president from different countries, that I think they failed. It was not successful. And the prime minister insisted that this was ended and that they're going to do that attack soon.
Last thing I wanted to ask you about, we have, of course, been covering here these reports of a massacre in the town of Maykadra, hundreds of people killed, allegedly at the hands of retreating Tigrayan forces. Will you be investigating that?
Well, first of all, you know that this Ethiopian Human Rights Commission, it's not the Paris A, it's not perfect, but they have reported on the mass killing and mass graves. And these are shocking allegations, 600, I think they were. But we need to be able to examine them and verify them. So we're looking, but now we don't have access to there. So we will be verifying the situation because the communication blackout has made it very difficult for us to conduct our verification work. But there is a need, I think, for independent investigations with a view to accountability, because the perpetrators must be held accountable so that entire communities are not held responsible and targeted in vengeance. So I think there's a lot of misinformation on all sides, which in itself can be dangerous and lead to further violence.
Commissioner, thank you very much indeed. Michelle Bachelet, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, joining us from Geneva. It's been more than 3 months since the disputed election in Belarus, which saw the country's longtime leader, Alexander Lukashenko, hold on to power in a vote widely seen as rigged. The protests that erupted afterwards are still going on, but Mr. Lukashenko shows no sign of stepping down, and the authorities are becoming increasingly violent in their attempts to suppress dissent. Jean McKenzie's been following the leader of the opposition movement, Svetlana Tikhanovskaya.
The energy of the protests in Belarus seem a world away from this miserably grey morning in Lithuania. Svetlana Tikhanovskaya gathers her team in a small, nondescript office, and they plot their next moves for how to take down Alexander Lukashenko.
I have to make extremely difficult decisions every day. Decisions that will make the moment of our victory closer. Just that stuff.
At the end of the meeting, Svetlana's shown a video from Minsk. A young man is being brutally beaten by secret police in a playground outside his flat. His head is banged against the metal rail of a slide. The mood in the room suddenly darkens. Svetlana is deeply affected.
How are you this morning? You seem...
horrible.
Horrible. Why?
I think that he'll die.
Authorities in Belarus have been beating and detaining protesters for months. Here they fire rubber bullets and stun grenades into the crowds. But as Lukashenko clings to power, the crackdown of dissent is becoming more brutal.
This regime, it seems that they don't have borders at all. As soon as he doesn't have money to pay riot police, they will refuse to serve him. They will come to our side.
Svetlana took over from her husband to stand in the presidential election last August after he was jailed by the regime. Against expectations, Belarusians united around her. And even though Lukashenko declared victory, many world leaders now consider her to be the legitimate president. A big part of Svetlana's new role has been travelling across Europe, meeting